the podtech.net, John Furrier with Tom Raftery.
Yep.
There it is. You have a tough name. Well, you got a good accent, too. It's not from Ireland. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, John. Thanks a million. Honored to be on the show.
I'm in Silicon Valley, and you're in Cork, Ireland?
Correct.
So I love your podcast. Pod Leaders is a great podcast. I love how you can get all these great guests. You're remote in Ireland. I just love how you can syndicate out and in, back in again. I just think you do a great show, so I'm a big fan. What do you think, and how's it going?
Oh, it's going great. It's going great. Traffic is increasing week on week. I got a great syndication deal there with a local news company called ENN, who are driving a lot of traffic my way as well. The quality of speakers, the quality of interviewees I'm getting on the site is phenomenal. I'm just humbled by the fact that these people are agreeing to come on the show. I've had Dave Siffrey from Technorati, Robert Scoble, Mike Arrington. You know, there's a long list of Insurf from Google, et cetera, et cetera. It's just great. The listenership is increasing due to the quality of the speakers that I've been fortunate enough to get. But it's great to me that these interviewees, so far away, the majority are in the U.S., mostly on the West Coast. It's amazing to me that they are good enough to come on the show.
Pretty big tech-savvy crowd out there, isn't there?
There is. We're very lucky in Ireland. We've a very unusual demographic. When I was growing up, the demographic was taught to us in school that 50% of the population were under 30. So we have an extremely young population. We've had a good education system, and we also, I think one of the keys to our current economic boom is our very generous corporate taxation policy. The corporate tax in Ireland is about 12%, which is one of the lowest in Europe. So combine the generous corporate tax with the young population, the good education system, and you've got a recipe for a lot of big companies to come and base themselves in Ireland. Most of the big high-tech companies worldwide have their European headquarters in Ireland.
So talk about the American companies out there. Which ones are the pretty big ones that you have out there? Because I know there's a lot of talk, obviously, that companies love the workforce and the tax break.
Well, Intel have their European headquarters here. Microsoft have their European headquarters here. Google have just opened a big base here. Amazon have a couple of bases here. Yahoo have a base here. Apple have their European headquarters here. HP have a big headquarters here. So do IBM. All the big ones, really.
Talk about some of the podcasts that you've done. Which one's been your favorite?
Oh, God, it's hard to pick a favorite. They've all been fantastic, really. There's hardly been a bad one. I did a great one with Drummond Reed a few weeks back. Drummond is the CTO of Cordance, based out of Seattle. And Drummond was talking about digital identities, which is a kind of a niche topic, really. Kim Cameron on Microsoft talks about it and a few others, but it's not something that before the podcast had really crossed my radar very much. I was kind of a bit apprehensive going into the interview, but wow, I mean, Drummond talked about it in such an evangelical way, with such enthusiasm, and explained it so clearly, the reasons why it's important and the technologies that are coming out around it, that it really got me into it. I went off and got myself an iName subsequently. I mean, it was a really, really good interview. There have been some other great ones. They've all been really good. The Vint Cerf one was fascinating. Robert Scoble is always good. Salim Ismail was brilliant. Salim is the co-founder of PubSub. I did two podcasts with him around microformat, structured blogging, all that kind of good stuff. Dave Siffrey from Technorati talking about Technorati and the stuff they're doing there. Steve Olakowski talking about FeedBurner. I mean, they've all been great.
Talk about your background. What are you interested in? Obviously, you have a tech background, right? And what's your background in technology, and where do you see it going for yourself?
I have a kind of mixed background in technology. I started out doing tech training for local companies. There was a local company called Horizon Technologies, who IPO'd a number of years back. I did technical training for them for their client base. And then I set up a company back in 1996 doing software development, database websites, a lot of big ones, local government contracts and private contracts, doing database websites. That company folded in 2002 with the downturn. I became CTO of a local software company, brought a few of my dev team with me. And also at that time started getting into blogging and more recently podcasting. I'm really interested in the whole social media aspect of things, the blogging, the podcasting, seeing where things like wikis and tagging and all that kind of stuff is going. So that's where my interest is, and that's roughly what my background is too. I've been in tech since 89, so I've been around a while now, giving away my age.
Yeah, you're about the same age as I am. I mean, that's the thing. You've seen the computer revolution, and then LANs, local area networking, and internet working, and now we're in full-on connected, always-on networks. It's pretty amazing how the software business has changed and managed services business has changed. It's been great.
That's been phenomenal. The change has been, it's been a breathtaking ride. It really has.
What I love about it, Tom, is that you and I could be having this chat right now. If you didn't do podcasting, we would have never hooked up. I mean, because of your voice and the interviews, a lot of people know what you're doing. And it's just amazing how this new social media can just completely change people's lives, people's relationships, people's knowledge. And I think it's phenomenal.
Absolutely. I still can't believe the kind of level of community that has been built up both around the blog that I do and the podcast I do. I was an inaugural Irish Blog Awards earlier this year, back in March, run by a guy called Damien Mully, and he ran it extremely well, ran it off his own blog, or set up a blog for us, in fact, asked people to vote on blogs in Ireland, Irish blogs, and there were 1,700 people in Ireland voted on it, which amazed me. I mean, it doesn't sound like a lot, I know, but out of Ireland, that's quite a significant number. So 1,700 people voted for blogs, and the award ceremony, there was about 200 people attended, and it was emceed by a local radio DJ who has his own blog, or a national radio DJ, in fact, who has his own blog, a guy called Rick O'Shea. And I went along there, having met very few of those people before, and people were coming up to me, introducing themselves to me. They read my blog, and blows me away that, people like yourself and like the people at the awards read my stuff or listen to my stuff. And, likewise, when I meet other bloggers or podcasters, you start to feel you know them long before you've ever met them. It's bizarre, really.
It's a great community. We're all kind of growing up together and really changing the world. This whole open media revolution is happening, and it's just so exciting, and I'm so happy for you, and I'm happy for me and my team, and it's been phenomenal.
Yeah. Speaking of your team, John, you got a big cash injection recently announced. How did that come about, and what are your plans with that?
We're excited. We have two venture capital firms in Silicon Valley invested in PodTech, Venrock Associates, which is the venture capital firm for John D. Rockefeller and his money over the years, Venrock. And also the other firm is U.S. Venture Partners. We raised $5.5 million in venture money. So we're really excited by that. And we're going to put that money to work to build a podcasting network, media company.
And can you talk a little bit more about the company you're hoping to put together with the money?
Well, I mean, as I said, I started doing a podcast just like yourself, and then it became a full-time job with the sponsorships, as you have now. You get one, and next thing you know, it starts rolling, and you get readers and listeners. Mainly listeners, and it evolved. My podcast evolved from a single podcast to 30 something channels on iTunes. There was just a huge appetite for content that's just not being covered by other media outlets. The Wall Street Journal, CNBC, and these outlets, and BBC, and they're not covering computer science, they're not covering certain technology stories. All they want to do is talk about public companies and their stock prices, and they try to pander to the broad audience. When in fact, there are millions of people who actually care about what Intel does, or they care about Web 2.0, or they care about some of these infrastructure shifts. And I think that combined with the fact that there is an ecosystem of community developing, of entrepreneurs, makes it a really exciting and unique place. So that really has been the thrust of what we're doing, and our success and the audience and the traffic has been phenomenal. And we're going to build upon that and innovate. Innovate on our format, innovate on technology, and innovate with people.
And a question you threw at me earlier, who was your most memorable interview?
I had a couple different interviews that were very memorable. I mean, I think Steve Forbes was very memorable because it was a big name. You know, he ran for president of the United States. I was in New York, and he went to his office and sat down in his office, in his library, and a very private one-on-one interview. That was pretty impressive, and it was scary at the same time. Like, you know, wait a minute, I'm not like Tim Russ or these guys in mainstream media. And we actually did a podcast. Turns out it was his first podcast. The ironic thing was the next week they had that whole cover story about, you know, beware of the blogs. It was a negative article in Forbes magazine. And here he was, the owner, doing a podcast himself. So that was kind of interesting. I thought Mark Cuban was the most interactive podcast, both before we taped and after. The guy is my age. He's just total billionaire, total energy, and, you know, very outspoken. And I thought he was kind of a jerk before I did the interview from how the press portrays him, but the guy's very cool. Very cool guy. And then, you know, other interviews, entrepreneurs and venture capitalists are always great. So they all kind of differ, you know.
Sure. And is there someone out there who you haven't interviewed that you'd like to interview?
I think, you know, one of the things I want to do is I want to interview more CEOs, publicly held companies. For example, Scott McNeely of Sun. A lot of these CEOs are like, they're protected. And, you know, I want to interview Sergey and Larry at Google. I'd like to interview those guys. You know, maybe President of the United States.
Tell me, one of the things I'm trying to do over here is I'm trying to evangelize both blogs and podcasts to local businesses. If I were to ask you, what do you see as the benefits of a podcast to a normal business, what would you say?
I think the power of someone's voice, unedited or not overly edited, is really underestimated. And I think that people hear voices. They hear things that can't be communicated in writing. Reading is great for comprehension, and I really believe that, so I don't think voices will ever replace the written word in terms of people can read blogs fast. I've heard all the arguments. Well, I can read 30 blogs in a minute. You know, yeah, of course, you're scanning headlines. But what's really interesting about podcasting is that the human voice has built-in communication and inflection and the nuances of speaking, and you could hear the difference. You can hear someone's passion. You can hear their level of commitment on something, or just subtle things that are communicated through the voice. So I think, you know, you get more intimate relationships with voices. You hear someone's voice. You hear what they're talking about, and you say, well, I like that person, or I don't like that person, or I like that topic, and I want to know more. So it sparks an emotional response. And I learned when I was in business school that, you know, marketing 101 is you want to hit emotional nerves of people, and that creates a brand. So, you know, logic makes people think, emotion makes people act. It's always been kind of a thesis of marketing. So I always like to talk to the people that I work with, get all the information out there, present it very logically, but voices bring an emotional aspect.
I was at Les Blogs, it's a conference in Paris last December, and at one of the talks there, one of the panel sessions there about podcasting and videocasting, some of the videocasters were trying to say that video is going to overtake podcasting this year. What do you feel about that?
I don't think so. I think there's an infatuation with video. If you look at it from like a YouTube perspective, I really think you're going to see the YouTubes and the rocket booms actually replace TV. So I think at that level, video rocks. Video is great. I mean, who doesn't like video? Who doesn't like watching stuff? That's why TV trumps radio. However, it doesn't trump radio when you're in the car or on your bike or, you know, skiing or whatever people do when they're mobile. But I think clearly podcasting absolutely is a mainstay, will stay around. Especially as mobile devices get more complex and more horsepower, you're going to see the phone being a more integral part of podcasting, as well as the iPod. So I just don't see the attention span for video being in that niche of where podcasting is.
Sure. And I think as well, there's two ends of it. There's the consumption end, as you talk about there, but I think there's also the production end. I think at the same talk, they were saying that for every hour of video, it takes at least 10 hours of editing. Plus, there's also the problem around formats. I mean, you have more or less a single format with podcasting and the production of MP3s. But in video, there's a whole slew of different formats to publish in.
It takes a lot of time to edit video. And that's why you're seeing a lot of amateurish stuff on like YouTube, because you know it's not edited video. But what interesting thing about I like about video, and you'll see this in podcasting as well, is I think the producers and the consumers will be the same. So the audience will also be the producers. I think you're still going to start to see, obviously, the reconstruction of media. You're going to see people, I think, developing their own in media in groups. So I think there'll be an economy of scale that will develop out of the community that you talked about. And I think that's the profound change that I see, is that the production environment and the dynamics of production are going to change completely to being either free or close to free, meaning you and I may collaborate on a podcasting piece like we're doing now. I'm actually editing. I'll send it to you. You can edit it and take it out and change it for your podcast, or we'll just do it together. But I see the same thing with video. Groups work together and say, here's the concert we went to, or here's the movie we went to, or a party or whatever, and maybe work on it together. So what are you up to over in Cork Island? What are you guys doing these days out there? How's the environment? What's it like?
Sure. In terms of IT, I think we're reasonably advanced, all right. The one area we fall down in European terms is our uptake of broadband. We've got about a 6% or 6.5% penetration of broadband. And that seems to be because, we've got problems with our telecoms provider not leaving go of the telephone lines. So the local loop unbundling hasn't really happened yet. The broadband is one of the most expensive in Europe. So the latest government report said that there isn't really a demand for broadband, which is just obviously baloney.
Sounds like they run the telecom company, like in the U.S.
They did until not so long ago.
Well, with fixed wireless, the stuff like Intel's doing with WiMAX and other things, hopefully they can get around that bottleneck.
It will happen, and it has grown a bit in the last year or two, but still not nearly enough. But in terms of the other things like mobile penetration, about 6 months ago, the mobile carriers announced that we had just passed 100% penetration in mobiles. So we've got...
advanced mobility environment for cellular, right?
Exactly. They're rolling out 3G here now. It hasn't really taken off. I mean, just because the mobile providers, their plans for data are still way too expensive. So people are getting 3G handsets because that's what's on offer, but they're not actually using the 3G facilities within the handsets. As I said, we've got over 100% penetration of handsets now, so I think there's like 1.1 handsets almost for every man, woman, and child in the country.
Good deal. Tom Rafturi, right? There it is. Great to chat with you. I love Pod Leaders, and we'll continue to do a podcast. I'd love to do a regular series with you.
Fantastic.
Good deal.
Sounds good.
Thanks for the podcast.
No problem, John. Thank you. Thank you for the podcast.